Hello, and welcome to Check It Out, Comrade, an indie game podcast where every 2 weeks we bring you two indie games and tell you what we like about them. I'm Nick Lauber.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this week we're talking about Escape Goat 2 and Goat Simulator. It is the goat special.
Yep. Goats are really in right now.
It's true.
Like, they're the new owls.
Exactly.
Which were the new cats. So.
True. So yeah, we're gonna go ahead and start off with Escape Goat 2. Mm-hmm. Which is a puzzle platformer developed by Magical Time Bean, who I've only known them before this to develop Escape Goat 1. They had Double Fine publish it for them, which is weird because it's just on Steam as far as I know.
Yeah, this is the first thing Double Fine has published that they didn't make, I believe.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure of that too. They seemed pretty excited about it.
Yeah.
But I also like this little blurb on their site where it says it's the only indie game in 2014 not inspired by Dark Souls, with no roguelike elements or procedural content.
Or crafting.
Or crafting. Like,
I really wish crafting had been in there, because that's my pet peeve.
True.
But yeah, totally true. And also, like, I want more of these games inspired by Dark Souls.
That's true. I do like those, but...
But yeah, the roguelike elements is for and procedural content. Good God. That's totally true. That is done to death. So Escape Goat 2. What is cool about Escape Goat 2?
So Escape Goat 2 is it's actually what I really like about it is it's a super straightforward puzzle platformer, single screen. You compared it previously to Lolo, the mm-hmm. NES Lolo games. It's just like very not reflex based for the most part. It's all about just like figuring out what the map is trying to get you to puzzle out, and it's just got like a real small, nice scope, and it does it really well.
Yeah, yeah, it's a lot like a Lolo, or like there's actually a NES game that it reminded me of a little bit more called Fire and Ice, which I think is pretty obscure but is excellent. If anyone wants to hunt down that ROM and likes this kind of experience,
yeah, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, like a single screen, you know, puzzle platformer with no pretensions to it. Like, it's not what's it called? The Jonathan Blow game whose name is escaping me.
Braid?
Braid, yeah. It's not Braid. Like, it's not anything to that effect that I can tell.
No. The what little, like, story they try and put into it is purposely, like, not actually getting anywhere. It's just, like, there's sheep and you rescue them. And this is their land. Like, that's the whole story.
To be fair, it's a little Dark Souls-y.
Yeah.
Like, their blurb. Like, you do, like, it's like a rescued divine sheep soul, and it kind of comes up in a Dark Souls font.
Yeah.
When you clear an area. Like,
I think that's purposely definitely
yeah, that's,
a reference.
Yeah, I think that is them being funny.
So, you did not, but I played the previous Escape Goat. Which mm-hmm. this is exactly just more of the same, which is excellent. It's upgraded art, and I feel like slightly more complexity to the puzzles, but it still gives you a decent ramp up, so you're not just like stuck in the middle of a game that you don't know how all the mechanics work.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so super straightforward mechanics. It introduces a little bit of some extra elements to it as you go on, but there's not a whole lot. Like, there's basically you're a goat. You can run and jump and double jump and headbutt stuff, which we'll be talking about a little bit more when we get to Goat Simulator. And you also have a little mouse buddy who, for the most part, is just there to toss around, and he'll walk up walls and stuff and press buttons for you. And then later on in the game, you can get some powers that allow you to swap places with him and get to places you couldn't access otherwise.
Mm-hmm. And use him to bait enemies.
Yes.
Which is a big part, because kind of destructible environments or tricking enemies into manipulating the environment mm-hmm. around you is a big part of, like, at least the mid-game.
Yes.
You know, kind of where I'm at. Judging by the map, I assume. Like, I played it for about an hour and 15 minutes or so. It looks like I'm entering it, like, I'm maybe a third. It isn't that very long.
I feel like I'm probably about the halfway point or so at the 2 hour mark, which makes this probably at least twice as long as Escape Goat 1 was. I think at this point I probably completed all of Escape Goat 1, but yeah, there's just more of it, which is it's fun. It's a nice little relaxing game to, you know, it doesn't take up a lot of your focus and attention. You can play a room and come back to it when you're ready to do another room, and I enjoy it quite a bit.
Yeah, it's very modular in that way. Like, it does require a lot of thinking. Like, it is definitely, you know, like you said, it's not reflex-based, even though there's a little bit of that. is primarily about studying the room, especially once they introduce more of these kind of traps and different enemy types, and kind of, you know, before you affect the world, kind of predicting what's going to happen. Some of them have this Rube Goldberg kind of sense to them. And, you know, doing that is a big part of it before you actually start moving and fucking things up.
Right.
It does the, you know, what you have to do in one of these games, like Lolo games, like, which I love those a lot, but those have lives, which is crazy.
That's so dumb.
Yeah. Like for a game where like one of the creatures of those Medusas that instantly kill you if they look at you, you should never have lives. And, this game does not, and you can restart at any point. Right. Even though I did find myself wishing, like one of, like, you know, I like this game a lot. I'll probably keep playing it. I had a couple like little polished things I wish were a little different. And one of them is I wish that I wanted to have like a Hotline Miami ask no load when you die or when you want to restart. Like you kind of load up a you died screen and then it has to kind of load the level back up. And if I could just instantly like I tried something, fuck it. Because some of the levels later, like, you know, you do have to kind of really get your toes wet.
Yeah.
Before fucking around.
Yeah, not to say that it's totally terrible in there. Like, it is only just a couple seconds. But Miami, like, instantaneous would be, I agree, would be an upgrade.
Totally. Like, these are minor. That's a minor gripe.
Yeah.
Like, it is not unwieldy by any means. It's just, like, you know, for something where you're going to be doing rapid kind of prototyping, it's nice to be able to instantly try again.
Totally agree.
And then there's a little bit of, like, the moving around the map stuff, too, that was a little, like, weird to me. Like, I don't know if I'm missing something, but it kind of gives this illusion of nonlinearity, but then it's not really. Like nonlinear?
Oh yeah, the overview map of all the levels.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right too. I'm pretty sure I hit like a portion I couldn't get past, and I couldn't figure out why, and then I was like, well, I guess I have like these two other roads to go down. So I think at most it like forks a couple ways and expects you to beat both those ways before continuing on the main path and stuff like that.
I guess it is nonlinearity, but in a way that doesn't matter so much. You can do them in any order, but they don't affect each other.
Right.
So it's not Dark Souls, or it's not like Mega Man or like Alpha Protocol or something where like it's an order, the order you do it. You just get to do it in whatever order you want, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know? And that's a little bit less, you know, cool. It's still, I mean, they could have just presented it as stage one, stage two, stage three. It didn't need this kind of geography to it, I think.
It does allow, because there's like multiple levels out at a time, you can get frustrated with one and go.
Yeah.
Go explore down a different path for a second, come back, and, you know, usually that sort of thing helps your brain relax a little bit and figure out what's going on.
That's true.
So, yeah, I think that was probably the only intent with it.
Yeah. I think for a game, like, if you're going to do something like this and have it be about 4 hours long, I would have been okay with straight-up branching paths, you know?
Yeah.
Like, when we were talking about how short it is and how short the first one is, like, that, I think that's perfect for this kind of game. You know, and that's one of the things I like about it is how kind of modest it is, but I think that this kind of game will struggle under its weight at a, you know, 100 levels or more, you know? So,
yeah, I'm actually pretty, it's pretty interesting that they didn't add a whole bunch of new elements and were able to still come up with a fair amount of different level designs in this second game, even though they used all the same basic elements in the first one, which the first one felt pretty good and pretty complete. And then they just, pretty sure they had a map editor in it, and I think they kind of just took the most golden bits of puzzles that they had come up with and fans had come up with and made a sequel out of that. So,
And that's totally fine for like something that is not a, you know, huge money investment,
right?
Like, or anything like that. Like having a map pack, like I think that gets thrown around a lot as like somehow super, you know, shitty. But like a lot of times, I'm okay with more of the same thing,
right?
You know, like, there are a lot of games where, like, you put out a new version every month and I'll just keep playing them because I always want that experience, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like, you look at something like The Wolf Among Us compared to, like, The Walking Dead, and the play and everything is the same. Like, that's Telltale now. That's what they do.
Right. Yeah.
But I just like that so much that it doesn't really matter to me that they're not innovating so much with
right.
it. I just want to spend more time in this kind of play space.
Yeah, I mean, like, you and I are more excited that for just about anything for Binding of Isaac Rebirth, and that's
totally.
Just going to be Rebirth with more items, and that's exactly what we want.
Yeah, we've been like, some more. Yeah, exactly.
Begging for it for 2 years now, and we're, you know, finally getting Binding of Isaac with more items, which is awesome.
And yeah, and even when you argue it down to something like Dark Souls 2 or something, which like has the same mechanics and stuff, and is in some ways just a lot of new levels, but like I want more levels than that.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like, and that's how I feel about a lot of this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
That never feels like a fair criticism to me. You know, you never see that with movies. Like movies can push things further, but like it doesn't, you know, it continues the same kind of thing. It doesn't need a whole new verb set. Like you don't have Batman 1, which is like an action movie, and then Batman 2 has to totally change like genres or be a novel or be a silent movie or something like that, you know? It's still an action movie.
Exactly.
You know, Batman still does the same stuff. It just continues the characters and situations.
And there's a fair bit of difference too between something like the games we've mentioned, where it was obvious there was a huge fan base who wanted more of the same, and like Call of Duty coming out with a map pack a month after the game is released.
And doing it for years and years.
Yeah.
Like right now I'm super excited about Dark Souls 2. If like in, you know, years and years from now, whether it became the next like Call of Duty where there's a new Dark Souls every year.
Oh yeah. We'd get and we're just like, so quick.
Yeah, like, you know, like Dark Souls Ghost Protocol, you know, or something like that. Like, you know, I don't know if I would still be into it.
Right.
You know, but, and then who knows, but yeah, I think it's okay to do like a level pack, you know, as long as that's not all you do. You know, like Mega Man did it successfully for like 4 games and it was still great.
Yeah.
And then didn't did Mega Man X, which was great. You know, they just got tiresome at like 5.
Exactly. And there was even space between those and it still got tiresome. So
yeah, you get a couple like level packs.
You get a couple, and this is a good level pack.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, and you know, if like a new scapegoat comes out every year, and it's the same kind of thing, like maybe that would be. And I don't think they're going to do that, but that might be something like, you know, give it a rest. But
right,
give them a break, I think.
But a good little $10 sequel to a good little $10 game is plenty fine by me.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. I totally agree. I was kind of expecting. I thought maybe since I hadn't gotten into it very far, I was going to get more Animal Friends.
Yeah.
But yeah, rather than just the mouse, but it seems like it's just the mouse.
It's just as far as I know, like. You know, I'm only halfway through this one, but the first one you only had Mouse Buddy.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of like that. I kind of like that they're fully exploring just puzzle and level design with these limited mechanics they have, instead of trying to kind of constantly change the puzzle mechanics you have around. Like kind of like going from Portal 1 to Portal 2, where Portal 1 was all these levels with this very limited verb set and just like all the cool things you could do with it. And then Portal 2 is like, here's basically 3 different games with 3 different verb sets.
Right. They spread those out. I think I like Portal 2 a lot, and they spread those out really well. And that's a good example of like, I think that a Portal 2 sequel that was just a level pack would have been hard to do, because it was like so innovative and so about the mechanic.
Yeah.
That doing like exploring new mechanics seemed, you know, useful. For this though, like you can either add variety in the verb set, or you can add variety in like the enemies and tiles and kind of things you're dealing with, and they choose the latter, which like makes sense for this type of game.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So yeah, that's a scapegoat too. I like it. Yeah.
I like it as well.
Yeah, especially, you know, fans of the genre. as much as that's a cliche, but like if you miss this kind of modest single screen puzzle platformer, like this is probably as good as you're going to get right now.
Yeah, so. I can't think of anything else, even fairly modern, that has the same layout. Like you said, like you referenced two NES games.
Yeah, you know, yeah, so. it's really old school.
Yeah,
In that respect, you know, even when you look at something like, even if it's not like a Braid, if you look at something like a Thomas Was Alone, that plays different and has kind of, you know, not a static camera angle and things like that. Like this is very much like a single screen kind of,
yep,
you know, old school puzzle experience. So yeah, good stuff.
Good stuff. So with that, let's move on to Goat Simulator.
Goat Simulator, a third person simulation game by Coffee Stain Studios, released for Windows and Linux.
Yep.
Just real recently, April 1st. So this is one of the newest games we've done. I think this might be the quickest turnaround we've ever had.
Yeah, very possibly.
Yeah.
So Goat Simulator, it started as kind of a joke for a game jam, and they made a little trailer out of it, and people thought it was the funniest thing they've ever fucking seen.
Mm-hmm.
So they decided to develop a game out of it and put it up for cheap, and you know, they purposely got it out super fast so that they could just give the people what they were begging for.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. And that was Goat Simulator.
Both these games function on the strength of like a name. Like they have this name backwards, like scapegoat. A scapegoat. A goat that escaped, and then you just like go with it. And then, you know, same thing with Goat Simulator.
With, yeah. So that's, I mean, that's it. Like, it's a goat simulator. So,
well, that's
that's what I'm saying. Like, that's, yeah, that's the basis of the entire game is how do you make a game that's called Goat Simulator, and what are you doing that?
Well, the trick is you don't worry, exactly, about simulating a goat,
exactly,
like, whatsoever.
So at that point, Gary, what is cool about Goat Simulator?
Goat Simulator is a weird, like, so it does a couple things really weird. Like, I like it. I'm not totally sure if it's a good game. And the things that it does that are very weird is, like, one, I don't think I've ever played a game more that is designed to be watched more than played than this. Like, if you're playing this with a group of people, like, throw this on in a living room with a bunch of people and it's great.
Yeah.
But, like, the way I play games, which is lonely and in my apartment, it's kind of weird. Like, it's funny for a little bit, but the same way, like, watching comedies is best with, like, a group of people.
Right.
You know, like, it kind of doesn't work nearly as well, like, by yourself. Like, it is, and the other thing it does is, I think the closest gameplay relative to it is Tony Hawk.
Yeah, it is. It's
which, Tony which Hawk is so game. Weird.
Like, it's Tony Hawk Pro Skater where you play as a goat.
Yeah, where you play as a goat and all of the kind of mastery parts of it are stripped away. Like, it has no, the trappings, yeah, of Tony Hawk in a lot of ways without having any of the real skill to it.
Yep.
You know, on purpose. Like, it was meant to be like a, you know, kind of a jokey, and like all the glitches and stuff that are in there are intentional. Like, all the, you know, non-game breaking, but like funny looking glitches, all that, yes, stuff is on purpose. Like, it is self-aware as hell.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, a mistake, but it is like a Tony Hawk without a lot of the things that make Tony Hawk work as a game.
Yeah,
you know, it's kind of a funny random thing for it to take off of.
And there is stuff to explore on the map, and then that's it. Like, that once you've checked out all the things you are to check out on the map, the game's done.
Yep.
So, like, you're gonna play this once. You're gonna play it for an hour or two, and although it's, you know, this open world game, that's, you're not, yep, gonna come back to it. Like, until they release another map with some new cool stuff to explore, that's all you're going to get out of it.
That's probably my most, like, as for something that is, like, a joke game that I try to think of, like, a lot of times when I feel like, when I get into the length to value ratio for a game, which I don't like thinking about.
Right.
But when I do think about that, one of the things is I try to think of things in terms of movies, like games that are like movies.
Yep.
And this is like a movie, like, you know, it's a couple hours of entertainment for about the price of a movie.
Yep.
But I still think that with how easy it seems like it should have been to design this, like, this should have come with more maps. Like, yeah, don't you feel like this should have had, like, a little bit more to do in it and still be, like, a $10 value and just feel a little bit better?
I think what they went for instead was early, like, pushing it out as fast as possible, and they're going to be releasing free maps as, yeah, time goes on.
Which is cool. Like, I want that, and I'll, right, definitely check those out.
So I agree with you, but I think mainly they just wanted to get it out before the hype train died out.
Yeah,
which is fine by me. Like, yeah, that's fine.
And probably made them a boatload of money. Like, you know, it was,
I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah, because it was hugely, you know, hugely gone. Like, there's a review I read on or watched on YouTube about it, where they're talking about when you make a game like this that is designed to be funny, you are building an advertising, because, like, you get this game on the box, it has like a blurb from PewDiePie. And it's like, that means, like, if PewDiePie is going to play this, it's like, okay, the number one YouTube channel in the world is going to be a commercial for this for, yep, weeks. You know, it seems like, exactly, a no-brainer in a weird way. Like, it seems like an instant way to make money is just to find something that PewDiePie would like and play.
This is a game created for YouTube and Twitch.
Yep.
And yep. Everybody knew that going into, yeah, it. There's nobody who was expecting more out of it other than a goofball thing to watch.
No, not by any means, yeah. Like, I don't think it's deceptive. Any of the kind of bad gameness of it, I don't feel is deceptive in any way.
Right.
Like, you know what you're getting with it.
Like, I opened this game up for the first time when my buddy was over. We had a few drinks already in us, and I streamed it to my other friends on IRC. Like, mm-hmm, that, there was no other way I was going to play it. I knew what the game was for.
Yeah, so. And it was hilarious, because it is really, really funny.
Yes.
And even by yourself, it's really funny for a while. You know, like, it is.
Yeah, like we've said, it's very limited in its ability to entertain, but those couple hours are pretty damn entertaining.
It also does a thing that, like, I really like that I've talked about before. Like, I like exploring bland environments in games. Like, and that's totally what this is. Like, it doesn't happen that often. You get to have a video game kind of verb set in a real life world.
It's just a little tiny slice of a neighborhood.
Like, yeah, it's a street. Is. Yeah, like it's a, you know, a couple street. It's like a block. And just being, yeah, able to, like, go and do all this stuff in this video game world that is a block. Like, that's always when I, you know, back when my first, like, game making experience that was not text-based was making maps in Unlimited Adventures, which is a D&D game that uses the Goldbox engine,
mm-hmm.
and he was an adventure creator. And the only thing we ever did was like make our neighborhood, you know, and like make our houses and stuff, which they didn't look like our houses. They all had walls, like cavern walls and shit, but they were like the same layout. And there's something just like really fun about that, you know?
Yeah.
And this kind of touches into that, like, oh, this feels like a real place. And then it's like doubly fun because you're introducing this like crazy agent of chaos into it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it reminds me kind of just like of a level of Katamari or something.
Like exactly. Just, it's like Tony Hawk by way of Katamari. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's actually a little bit more I want to talk about that, but we will talk about that in a spoiler section. So you should play this game, but we're going to talk about a little bit more in depth about some of the actual things you can visit on the map.
Real quick, too, is just like as a non-spoiler thing. Yeah. It should be noted that this game, like the people who made this game made Sanctum.
Yes.
Made those games for, which are just like real games.
Yes.
Like they are not, like it's a really strange, in a weird way, it is very shrewd of them to do this. Because it is a low effort product that is going to make a lot of money and get their name out there. And you can tell that they really, you know, like this is probably not where their hearts lie.
Oh, no.
You know, it reminds me of like when you see, you know, actors like, you know, who usually do art movies and end up doing like some, you know, do like Transformers or something. Or like, you know, when like Bob Hoskins did Super Mario Brothers because his kids would like it.
Right.
You know, it's like, or like, you know, and that would pay for him doing, you know, whatever art movie he wanted to do.
Right.
You know, because, like, the Sanctum games, like, I don't love those games, but they're decent.
Yeah.
And they're not, you know, lazy. Like, the people who made them believe in those gameplay elements and want to make the best game they can. And this is going to allow them that freedom, you know? And it's hard to begrudge somebody that, even if it does mean that it is, like, you know, a joke rather than a game.
I agree. Like, I give them some leeway in that just because the response to the, like, fake trailer for it was so huge that that's why the game came about, was, like, everybody was like, "Oh my god, I need to play this," and they're like, "Well, if that's what they want," and they put, you know, it was very low effort and probably made them a buttload of money, just like you said. And you know, maybe somewhere in there was the thought like, if everybody wants it so bad, we could make a shitload of money, so let's do it. But I don't know, like they put it out as a joke, people responded to it well as a joke, and then they just developed it into a full joke.
Yeah, it's also giving the people what they want, you know, which is nothing too wrong with that. So yeah, I mean that as a thing. Like, I didn't mean that. I just meant this is not like a, you know, like a one-off kind of manipulative thing. Like these guys actually, you know, make games and want to make games and stuff as well. Like this isn't their entirety of their purpose.
And part of this is fine. Who cares? Even though this is part of the map, but you said like you made your neighborhood in this game. They made their development studio in the map.
Yeah.
Like, there's like, fuck it. We're putting things in this map. How about we put us right here? So.
And, it was probably a blast to do. And it's, you know, it is a super fun product. Like, I like it a lot. I feel like I almost wish that it had, like, the way that the Tony Hawk elements, like, I was trying to think of, like, what separates it from Tony Hawk, you know, even though it has those things.
Yeah.
And part of it, I think, is the time limit. And I kind of wish they included that as a mode. Like that's a time attack, like score as many points as you can within a certain, like have it exist as this thing. They put it out on Front Street. Like they were never deceptive, but they just said, this is what it is. Have it exist as that, but also exist as this like slightly meteor experience, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know. I would have been cool with that. And that could still come in too. So.
Yeah. I think that'd be cool to have like a high scoreboard or something where it's just like 5 minutes who can get the most. You just have to make effective use of what items are on the map to make for the most point giving experience. And then, you know, you can compare your scores with everyone else, and speedrunners will take full advantage of all the physical glitches and it'll be fantastic.
Yeah. And actually now, because we were about to go into spoiler space, but we haven't said anything really about what you do in this game at all, which is not a spoiler. We kind of just left it as assumed.
All right.
But if you haven't played it, we'll talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, sure. It's you third person gamer, you're a goat and you can jump and headbutt things and lick things, and in doing so you can rack up points by smacking things into other things and doing little tricks in the air. And other than that, the rest of the game is just built on top of doing those things with interactive items on the map in various ways and kind of discovering some interactions or special locations that sometimes give you effects beyond your regular abilities.
Right, and everything gives you points.
And everything gives you points.
Like, you're rewarded for everything you can do. And yeah. if you see something, you're like, maybe I can get up there and do this. Like, you can, and you'll be able to do something.
Yeah, you'll get special points for that.
Yeah.
I mean, you get points for jumping. And you also get points for jumping over a fence. And you also get points for jumping your way up to the top of a tower.
Yeah.
So.
And the game, the way it does that is really clever, where you, the very first scene, you're in this backyard with some, like, obstacles that you would have out for an animal. And immediately you think, oh, maybe this is a goat simulator and I'm going to learn how to do these things. But then once you see how you control and the way everything flies away from you when you hit it and how glitchy it is, you're like, oh no, this is a pretty clever joke. Like, I am actually a cannonball. Like, I am not a precision instrument, you know, in a real kind of like a way that reminisces, reminded me a little bit of Octodad too.
Yeah.
The way that you are just, you know, this destructive force.
So you're a destroyer of worlds.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You're going to become death. So we can go into spoilers right now. I just wanted to make sure we covered that in case anyone was just like, yeah, they didn't actually talk about the game at all.
I totally agree. I kind of jumped the gun on spoiling.
The stuff that we're going to talk about is fun to talk about, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, you could really watch it and get the full experience, but, you know, play it or watch it or whatever. We're going to talk about it after this break.
Yeah. So just before we do the break, by way of admin, if you like the show, definitely go on iTunes and rate and review it. That helps us out a whole lot.
Yep. And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/checkitoutcomrade or on Twitter at twitter.com/comradepodcast.
Yep. And if you like the show, the biggest thing you can do is tell somebody that you like it. So if you have a blog or if you have a message board and someone's saying, hey, what podcasts talk about this stuff and you like this show, I mean, don't lie, but if you like this show, let people know, because that's a recommendation from somebody you know is always more powerful than a random one. So,
yeah, and if there's any games you'd like to see us cover, hit us up on duckfeed.tv/comrade, which is our homepage, or any of the various places on the social network internets that we are around on, and we will consider it, probably play it, and possibly show it up on the show.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, so now let us go into spoilers.
Yes, so now there will be a little tune, and we'll be back.
Okay, what happens to the goat at the end of this?
Is there an end to this?
No. No, I was just making a joke about there being, you know, the goat being Gwyn's true son or something. I guess not the case, but...
No, but he is apparently possibly the spawn of Satan.
Among other things, yeah.
Among other things. So, as I mentioned before, there's kind of various locations and interactive things you can do on the map, and some of them lead to some upgrades for your goat abilities. I want to say I've discovered them all, because I played for a couple hours with my buddy Miles. Let's just go into a couple of them and talk about their cool effects and how much they break the game even more, which is amazing.
Yeah, and some of these I ended up looking up on YouTube. Like, I didn't actually find in real life. Like, I found some of them. I didn't find all of them. But it reminded me a little bit in that respect of, like, Stanley Parable.
Yeah.
Where, like, you're trying to just explore and figure out what these kind of... You know, not endings, but kind of end of the gameplay.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and they kind of combine too, which is makes for hilarious results.
Yeah, so. It just makes you more destructive and chaotic.
Yeah. So let's see. Yeah. I think let me try and think of what order we found stuff in. I think we probably actually found right where you start. There's the goat tower. And if you go into the goat tower, there's kind of a row of goats on either side of a red carpet who all bow to you as you're walking up.
Well, you're not going into the goat tower. You get transported to, like, the Game of Thrones medieval goat castle.
But you get there by the goat tower.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean. It's like a portal.
Yes, it's a portal to this castle. And at the end of it's a flaming throne that once you sit in and wait for a couple seconds... you are transported back, and now every time, I think it flashed a message about being able to summon allies or something like that, and every time you press the special ability button, we were playing on a controller, so it was left bumper, but I'm sure it's something different on keyboard and mouse, a goat falls out of the sky.
Yep, and dies
on
impact.
It does nothing else.
Yep.
And that's all that power does.
Yep, and your R button will always do that, even if it ends up doing other things too.
Yes, yeah.
So
combine.
Yeah, it'll add to it. There is a pitching machine.
Yeah.
That you can get that you walk into and it kind of mounts itself onto you.
Yeah.
Which makes you shoot baseballs. with that. Mm-hmm. Because there are people in this game too, and a lot of the points you're going to get are just killing them.
Yeah.
They immediately go limp and just die when they're touched at all, which is great. Yeah, there's the UFO encounter, which is one of the trickier ones to get.
Yeah. Does it do anything else once you get up there? Is it just that void of space for like 10 minutes?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Just making sure we didn't miss anything.
Yep, it's just a goat in space.
You're just a goat in space, and we're like, me and Miles were trying to figure out for so long, like, how do we do anything or get back, and then suddenly we were back.
Yeah.
After a very prolonged period of time. Let's see, I'm trying to think, I know the fantastic one that I want to mention, but I'm trying to think if there are any other
There's
minor
the goat
ones.
Wrestling.
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah, goat wrestling. Yeah. So there's a little circle in the farm fields of people gathered around these goats. They're obviously cockfighting, but with goats. And you come in, and if you bash these goats, I think there's like 3 rounds of them, each getting progressively stronger. If you manage to bash them out of the circle, sumo wrestler style, then after the 4th one, you turn into the 4th one, and you're super buff.
You're a beef goat.
Yeah, your beef goat, and like now instead of having to headbutt anything, that's just your automatic thing. Like as soon as you're walking, everywhere you walk, you do this huge headbutt, and then your regular headbutt is charged up even more. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's this isn't quite as big as it's kind of a secret thing, but doesn't change your abilities. Did you run the guy through the thresher?
No.
Yeah,
there's a guy through there.
There's a guy next to the thresher, and when you lick something, it sticks to your tongue.
Right.
Which, like, one thing you should do is lick a car as it's going by, because that's really funny. if you lick the guy, you can drag him into a thresher, and you get, like, a mutilator bonus or something like that. Like, it's really dark.
Another one like that that doesn't give you a power is there's a, like, little factory that you can go through, which also includes a little ragdoll half pipe.
It's an anti-gravity research facility.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And then when you get to the top, you're blasted up to the like top of the map and slowly fall. I don't think there's anything else in there, right? You just kind of blast out into not actual space. But
there's the half pipe, and then there's that like floating fan zone with like all the balls and stuff you can kick in there to play around. But it's not get anything. You just do that blast thing.
You just get ejected out of it for extra points.
Yeah.
I don't know, is there any other besides the big one?
I think it's just the big one at this point. Right. I don't think there's anything else.
So the big one, which is definitely the most fun and awesome to find, is in one of the corners of the map you can find a big pentagram. It's glowing red and all the lights turn real dark when you go up there. And if you drag, I think 5 bodies up there, either people that you've killed from nearby or goats that you've dropped with your goat power, they will suddenly turn into a big morphous ball in the center and then explode out, and you'll get these huge goat horns, devilish, satanic, awesome horns. And now your special ability power will allow you to katamari up a whole bunch of everything around you into this sphere and then let it go in an explosion of fantastic physics breakage.
There's the, can you get the jetpack through the level or only through the custom game thing?
No, I think we did find the jetpack somewhere. I don't remember where.
I can't remember. I never found it that way. I just found it through, that was the thing I knew that I didn't get. So.
Yeah, I think we did find that, but I can't remember the puzzle, what you had to do to get it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that one's fun too. It's completely uncontrollable.
Yeah. I thought it would be controllable because you have control over your pitch. From doing the backflip thing.
Yeah, but it doesn't really work out. Once, because you like automatically ragdoll as soon as you do it, and once you ragdoll, you don't really have that pitch control.
Yeah.
Actually, I think that one might be at the top of the under construction tower. That's in one of the corners near the 2 trampolines in the pool.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think that's where it's at.
Because I don't think I got quite up there. So.
But one of my favorite things about the satanic power, going back to that for a second, is if you're licking any of the objects as you suck them all up into the sphere, you just flip out the physics engine. And you're just like flying all over the map. And sometimes out of the map, which can lead to game breaking, falling through nothingness. But it's all kind of, purposely not they purposely didn't really secure any of their variables or anything in the game. Like, the physics are meant to be off the wall and breakable and just goofball.
Yep. Yep. Funny looking.
Like I said, it's entertaining for a couple hours, but those 2 hours are pretty damn entertaining.
Yep. Absolutely. Agreed.
All right.
Cool.
So I think that's the GOAT special.
Yep, that's GOATs until, you know, the next couple GOATs game come out. So.
Right. Yep. All right. So thanks for tuning in, guys.
Yep. Thanks, everybody.
Catch you next time.
Bye.